You're listening to an encore presentation of The Rush with Ryan and Jay on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
Christy Blatchard is here from the National Post. Amanda Galbraith, principal at Navigator, and John Pohl, News Talk 1010, host of The Pohl Position. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good day.
Some of the stories that we get to do on the roundtable really play well to the room, which is why we decided to start with this one. A cycling advocacy group says that the Bollards' new learned word alert that the city's been using to provide barriers for many of its bike lanes are too flimsy. Now, if you can't picture these in your head, think about any bike lane that you've seen, and there's broken pieces of plastic that are completely bent over between you and a cyclist. That's what the bollards are. And this advocacy group wants a new permanent solution to protect the growing number of people opting to use bikes to move around Toronto. And I know, Christy, when I look at those bollards and I see the incredible state of disrepair that they're in, I always think to myself, well, I sure hope that was a temporary solution and that they're working on something better.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm not a cyclist, and, you know, honestly, sometimes I find it all a bit too much. But as a pedestrian, a driver, and, you know, a person who has to pay attention to cyclists, I think the only safe solution are permanent concrete things. You need protected bike lanes. You really do. There's too many people on the roads.
Let's move you over to the cycling lane now and
yes.
Say hello to Amanda.
The only cyclist on the panel.
Mm-hmm.
John's already waiting. listen, I feel pretty safe riding through these lanes with the bollards, to be totally honest with you. I think you just have to be smart about it. Obviously, I prefer a separated bike lane with a big, nice curb and,
yep.
You know, like...
Those big planners.
Big plan, like everything. But those cost lots of money. And if I have to choose between having a dedicated bike lane versus car lanes or... driving in traffic and bollards or nope, I'll take the bollards. I'm trying to pronounce it correctly.
I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a bollard.
So I think this is very nice, but I think, you know, in cycling advocacy group's job are to push for this kind of stuff. And obviously that's what Jared's doing. He's smart. I know him. I think we should take a look at the price tag before we all sign up for it.
But maybe we can just take care of that price tag by cycling, by taxing cyclists, John.
Well, I mean, that's obviously an option.
Amanda
just said there made complete common sense. She is a cyclist. If you follow her on Twitter, you know she's the cycling queen of Toronto. And if she's feeling safe and she actually knows what a bollard is, and again, I think the cost comes down to it. Christy's right. Obviously, those concrete barriers would make the most sense. But we got to factor in winter and snow removal, and then there's a different level of safety with that and water flow. It's not an easy answer, and I guess you'd have to look to another city, you know, maybe a Chicago or a New York. Like, is there somewhere on this planet where they have merged our weather and cyclists and cars together successfully? I can't think of an example, but maybe it's out there.
Wait a minute. Are you suggesting the city of Toronto follow precedent in another city?
It's a radical thought is what's going on.
That
here.
Doesn't sound radical. Like some sort of pilot project we could just stuff down everybody's throats, John.
If nothing else, you have quoted Skilo on this show.
It's very true. I could probably go home now. Yep. A junior college in Quebec City says it's opening an embarrassing video shared on social media showing members of its women's basketball team criticizing immigrants and Muslims will be a learning opportunity. In the video, one of the female basketball players says, "Oof, F Muslims, man, they're all terrorists." These girls will be asked to perform 30 hours of community service. They will be suspended from the basketball team. Four players in total. Christy, does that go far enough? They're calling it a teachable moment.
Well, I think they're actually making it a teachable moment. You know, they're not going to be naming the offending players. They were suspended. The team itself, I think, had to forfeit a game. They're going to do community service. The school is looking at improving and, you know, starting different programs to teach people the obvious, which is, you know, A, try not to think like this, but B, if you do, be quiet, and C, don't spread it around. I mean, the primary lesson is don't be a racist. Don't be so ugly and say something like that. But I do think the school is handling it well.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, and I liked what Christy said there. They're making it a teachable moment, Amanda, in a situation like this. I hope that the community service involves something to do with the faith that they were pretty mouthy about.
Yeah, I totally agree. I agree with Christy. I know that shocks everyone. But
I love you, Amanda.
I love you, too.
I'm going to have to split you guys up.
But, you know, I think we're all quick to climb upon high outrage or whatever in these scenarios. And I think, you know, these are teenagers. This stuff is obviously totally inappropriate. And I think the best thing you could do is have them, you know, work with people in the Muslim community to understand they're people too, and they should never be treated like this. And this kind of stuff people just throw out there is totally inappropriate.
John Paul?
Look, kids do stupid things, and that has been happening for years. I like the fact that we're not going to prosecute them to the nth degree of the law. We realize that they're kids. I like kicking them off the team. I think that's fair. I think the 30 hours, I could argue it might be 50 or 60, but 30 is a really good start. And again, I think teaching them why it was wrong and having them acknowledge that. And as you mentioned, and Amanda mentioned as well, you know, spending some time in the Muslim community would probably change their opinion very, very quickly. So I like that they're handling it. I like that they're handling it straight ahead in the media and also with the kids. And they realize that kids who can be good kids still do make mistakes. And Lord knows we've all made them. So I think this is more than reasonable.
A very spirited discussion today around an Australian woman who...
It can't be real. Unless Mike Pence's wife has a suit in them.
All right. Now, keep in mind that the list we're about to read to you, that is a list of demands for this woman's husband, was the revised list after the first one that she posted was she was told coming off a little bit harsh. So this is the new list that she had prepared for her husband, okay? No female friends. No social media. You have to work 50 hours a week minimum. No smoking. You can drink, but only twice a year, and you can't get drunk. No PlayStation or game console. Have to keep the house clean at all times, and no going out without me. Now, unsurprisingly, Christy, people had a lot to say about this list. Some people calling it draconian.
Really?
A lot of people calling it a number of words about this woman that I would not like to read publicly.
I'm telling you, if I'm that man and I didn't know what this woman was like going in, I have now grounds for divorce. That's all I'm saying. I don't believe it's real. I don't believe anybody could be that stupid. But I am forever surprised at...
Some of the things on that list. I'm not going to say that the whole list, you know, doesn't sound unrealistic. But, Christy, I can tell you some of those things on that list, a few buddies of mine have been... They've been read that part of the Riot Act, where especially the video game consoles. Sorry, it doesn't fly in the house.
Yeah, I guess so. It's the no female friends thing that really, and no going out without her. I mean, that's just an unrealistic way to live your life. It's, you know, Mike Pence who said, remember, he would never go out for lunch with a woman other than his wife.
You mean mother? Well, that's the nickname he had for her, which is mother.
Here's a question. Who wants to spend that much time with their partner? Like, I mean, yeah. I love my boyfriend, but I do not want to spend every waking hour with the man.
Sure.
Like, which apparently this woman seems to have as an objective. Like, no, thank you very much. I have my own life. So does he. We do our thing. And then we come back together.
Now, part of the discussion that we had. Go ahead, Ron.
I was just going to say, John Paul's wife has become a bit of a character on this show. So I can't wait to see how he answers this.
Well, John, what I was going to say to you was, you know, you and I have both been married a really long time. And, you know, and we had this discussion earlier this afternoon. Relationships and marriages are a bit of a negotiation, and that you sort of find your own ways in which to do things. And I think we do have certain rules. I mean, for me, they're not necessarily written down, but it's just the ways in which our relationships work the best. And sometimes having rules is a good idea.
Well, look, I think there's a difference between a rule and being considerate of the person you love the most in the world. They're two different things. If this is her list, I want to see his list. I also would say if I have to work a minimum of 50 hours a week to be married to this woman, put me down for 200 hours a week because I want to stay as far away from her as possible. No PlayStation? Like, I can handle some of the other stuff on that list, but no video games, no Fortnite, I'm out. Here's the interesting thing. Here's the interesting thing. If a dude wrote this list about his wife, people would be hunting him down, hoisting him up for everyone to view. It's just not appropriate. And I'm with Christy. I got to believe it's either fake, it's a joke, or it's going to be a horribly single woman for a very long time.
This study, I don't think, says anything surprising. It was done by the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. They found in the Greater Toronto Area, the added cost of a long commute often offsets the savings to be had from cheaper housing in the suburbs surrounding the city. They found, Christy, that homeowners attracted by the affordability of a house with a plot of land in a bedroom city can save money by commuting by public transit, but the trade-off is your commute is going to be longer. And, of course, the reverse is true in the city. I'm not sure this is going to surprise a lot of people. It's not really groundbreaking. But if you had to trade one off for the other, what would you choose?
I would never commute. I can't conceive of living that way. I do it occasionally for work. I took the GO bus to Hamilton to cover a trial for about 3 weeks, and it worked really well. It took me between an hour and 15 minutes usually, which is not much longer than driving, because I've done that drive many times. So, I realize people have to do it, but I would rather choose a crappy basement apartment downtown than live in a far-flung suburb.
Yeah, and Amanda, you look at even the costs of commuting. Commuting costs range from an average of under $200 a month in the city of Toronto to more than $800 a month in Halton Hills to the northwest, Georgina to the north, and Clarington to the east. And when you get a little further out there, the cost just keeps going up and up.
Yeah, and it's your time, right? It's your life. At one point in my life, had a contract in Kitchener-Waterloo and used to commute there from Toronto, from Leslieville. It was awful. It was like 2 hours in a car each way. And now I shoot down on my bike in 15 minutes or occasionally take the TTC and that kind of stuff. And it's just, if I have to choose between, I have my little condo, I love it. And if I had to pick between a condo and a 15-minute commute and a big giant house, I will pick.
Let's turn to John Pohl, who's broadcasting from his compound this afternoon. John, can you hear me, John?
I can. tell you this. Yeah. Here's how my life works. Whatever song is playing on the radio when I leave my house, that song is still playing when I get to my office. If it was two songs, I just wouldn't go to the office. It's too far. I respect everyone who commutes because you are a hero, because I could not do it. I could never, ever. I would live with my mother in her basement forever if I had to avoid commuting, because it's not so much the cost, it's the time. I just don't.
Like, if you had to work in Toronto, how long is that drive from where you are?
Oh, from where I'm sitting right now, like 3 hours.
Yeah.
So I'm not doing it. Can't do it. It's not possible. The other side of it, though, is I want my time. Like, even if it's an hour each way, that's 2 hours a day. That's 10 hours a week. That's a full extra day of work you're spending in your car. And I know a lot of people say, well, I listen to, you know, The Rush, and I talk on the phone and I do things and I decompress. That's just not me. I'm not wired that way. I want to be able to go do stuff. And my time on this planet is, we only have so much time. I don't want to be stuck in a car myself. So I'll take the crappy apartment too.
Starting this month, Canadian IKEA branches are going to be buying back your gently used IKEA furniture in return for store credit. They made this announcement at the Zero Waste Conference in Vancouver. And before you ask, yes, most IKEA furniture, excluding beds. Now, what you'll need to do, and I think this is a great idea, Christy, is you jump through a couple of hoops, you need to put together an account, you need to send some pictures, but you get that in-store credit, and then the stuff that you give to them, IKEA will then sell in their as-is section, which is probably my favorite place at IKEA.
I think it's a very cool idea. I've loved this company from the moment I first went in my first IKEA store. So I love everything they do.
You never forget your first IKEA.
No, you don't.
We all have the Hemnes dresser.
Is putting the application together as hard as putting the furniture together?
No, the app's pretty easy. It's basically the IKEA family account. So you're good to go.
Don't lose that key, that special key. What's it called?
Yeah,
the Allen key.
Yep, thank you.
It's one of those things you have to have a set of, by the way.
One of the things that IKEA does now, which is great, is they have like an odds and sods room where you can actually go and get little bolts and little pieces.
Yes.
Like they have like just buckets full of them. And you're like, that's the one thing I need.
This is huge. In places like Finland, they have stores like this that are set up just as stores. They're not even like your Value Village or what have you secondhand. They're just secondhand stores with lightly used stuff where people come in and it's big business.
Can you use your
Makes
store
sense.
Credit, though, in the actual dining lounge where they're licensed? We're going to check on that one.
$1
meatballs. Hot dog.
$1 meatballs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Amanda Cole's Galbraith, here. Christy Blatchford, John Pohl. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great stuff this afternoon. Good conversations on a number of different things.